that with Steve.
Not really.
Commissioner?
You're cherry picking what you come to now. Yesterday was just, today catches your fancy, but yesterday was
Fill the chambers.
That's right.
Hi.
All right, Carly, ready?
Yes.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the August 28th meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll, Carla?
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Okay, we have a single item before us this afternoon. Would you read that item?
Item 904, appeal of Arlington Neighborhood Association and Hillary McKenzie against hearing officer's decision to approve a conditional use review and an environmental review for proposed development at the Portland Japanese Garden at 400 Southwest Kingston Avenue, LU14122172CUEN.
Thank you very much. This is a quasi-judicial land use hearing. I'm going to turn it over in a moment to the city attorney for some procedural information and guidance, but first need to ask council members if any of us has a conflict of interest or ex parte contacts to report.
Mayor, I have none that would strictly qualify, but I guess I should disclose that I did skim an article in Willamette Week that appeared this past week, and the last time I was visiting the Japanese Garden, they had some display set up of their expansion plans that I saw in passing, but otherwise I've had no direct communications on the substance of this matter.
And not with the parties to the case.
And not with the parties.
Okay. Thank you. Anything Fair. Else?
I actually did, to be honest, I can't remember when it was. I think about 6 months ago, met with one or more board members of the Japanese Garden, and they did mention this matter.
All right. Does anyone have any questions of council members about our objectivity on the hearing in front of us? If not, then Catherine, your points and guidance, please.
Good afternoon. Before I make the opening announcements required by state law, I just want to set the stage briefly. You have two appellants today. One is the Arlington Heights Neighborhood Association. One is an individual, Hillary McKenzie. I understand that the Neighborhood Association intends to withdraw its appeal, and there is a representative here who would like to formally do that on the record. So perhaps okay. We could deal with that first, and then I will go ahead with the announcements.
Prior to the staff report, or hear the staff report?
Prior to the opening announcements, just to get that okay. appeal off the table.
All right, that's fine. So can we have the representative or representatives of the Arlington Heights Neighborhood Association come up and tell us where things stand, please?
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. I'm Joe Angel. I'm a board member of the Arlington Heights Neighborhood Association. And after our appeal was filed, we had several meetings with the Japanese Gardens about issues concerning what we consider to be livability issues in the neighborhood, about the application and safety issues in the neighborhood about the application. And we, on several of those items, have reached an agreement with the Japanese Gardens about how to solve those problems amongst ourselves. And we have, when Steve Bloom comes up to talk to you, he can present and put on the record a signed agreement between the Neighborhood Association and the Japanese Gardens.
Okay, so that's in written form?
It's in written form. We're appreciative of the time and effort that everybody put into this, both on the neighborhood side and on the Japanese Garden side, and their architect and their contractor. And many of the big hot-button issues have been resolved.
Mayor, I do recall a hearing we had within the last year or so where the parties reached an understanding informally outside of this process. And I believe the position we took at that time was that it would not actually go on the record because it was an agreement struck outside of our process. So I don't know what the ground rule is on that. But
I'd take your counsel on that question as well, Catherine. We can still deal with the substance of the matter before us with the record that we have. But
Well, I think any agreement that the Neighborhood Association and the Garden Society have reached is a side issue and is a side agreement and wouldn't be included as part of this hearing or part of this proceeding. That still leaves Ms. McKenzie's appeal.
Right.
And any issues that individuals want to testify to with respect to that appeal, they can do that.
Right, right. So you're not, the Neighborhood Association is not depending on the council to enshrine this agreement that you have with the Japanese Garden because you have an agreement, right?
We have an agreement how you want to treat it. We obviously want that agreement carried out, but how that is process-wise, I don't know what to tell you either.
Okay.
Well, so what I'm hearing is that the Neighborhood Association is withdrawing the appeal as of now.
We are withdrawing the appeal based upon this signed agreement.
I think that's probably all you need to know at this point. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's good. Joe, thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, Catherine.
And by the way, let's also acknowledge that this process works best when the parties come to their own agreements, understandings without the intervention of the council. So
right.
We should acknowledge and applaud the efforts of the parties to reach an understanding.
Right. And one of the reasons I was asking the question about whether it needs to be enshrined in our record is obviously the Japanese Garden is a nonprofit organization operating a city park. So they're fairly, those are fairly bankable organizations in terms of people that can make agreements and stick to them. So the need for us to put that into a land use record is probably minimal, if any.
Yes, my only concern is if
parties and greed.
If the agreement is still in compliance with the approval criteria and the hearings office's decision. But I suppose we would run into that later if it turns out that they say, oh, but we agreed on this, and the city says, well, no, that's not what the hearings officer said.
Right.
Okay.
Well, we may hear more about that. So, Catherine.
I have several announcements I'm required to make by state law and the city zoning code. These concern the kind of hearing we're having today, the order of testimony, and the kind of the scope of the testimony today. First, this is an on-the-record hearing. This means you must limit your testimony to material and issues in the record before the hearings officer. In terms of order of testimony, we'll begin with a staff report by Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, the City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and will have 10 minutes to present her case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak to the council. The applicant will then have 15 minutes to address the City Council and rebut the appellant's presentation. The council will then move directly to testimony from persons who oppose the appeal after supporters of the appeal have concluded their testimony. Finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentations of opponents of the appeal. So let me make that clear. 10 minutes for the appellant, 3 minutes each for supporters of the appellant, 15 minutes for the applicant, 3 minutes each for supporters of the applicant, and then 5 minutes for the appellant for rebuttal. The council may then close the hearing and deliberate and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, the council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If the council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before the council. My recommendation to the council is that your vote today be a tentative one. We will need, whatever your decision, we will need to revise the findings. Finally, I'd like to announce several guidelines for those who will be addressing City Council today. Again, this is an on-the-record hearing. This hearing is to decide only if the hearings officer made the correct decision based on the evidence that was presented to him. This means you must limit your remarks to arguments based on the record compiled by the hearings officer. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the hearings officer. You may not submit new evidence today that was not submitted to the hearings officer. If your argument includes new evidence or issues, you may be interrupted and reminded that you must limit your testimony to the record. The council will not consider the new information, and it will be rejected in the City Council's final decision. If you believe a person who addressed City Council today improperly presented new evidence or presented a legal argument that relies on evidence that's not in the record, you may object to that argument. Finally, under state law, only issues that were raised before the hearings officer may be raised in this appeal to City Council. If you believe another person has raised issues today that were not raised before the hearings officer, You may object to council's consideration of that issue. One thing I would note for the council is, in reviewing the testimony, that written testimony that has been submitted to the council, staff has identified one issue that was not raised before the hearings officer that is raised in that testimony, and that's the issue of bird-friendly design. So I would simply note that for the council.
Okay.
So let me just clarify, so that the issue of bird-friendly design is not on the record.
That's not one of the issues that was raised before the hearings officer and is not an issue that is properly presented today.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Appreciate that clarification. Okay. Any questions for Kathleen before we proceed? Then let's have our staff report, please, Kathleen.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. I'm Kathleen Stokes, and this is Rachel Whiteside. We are the Development Services staff for this case. Additional city staff are also in the audience and can answer questions that you may have. The case that is before you today under this appeal includes a major expansion and alterations to the development of the Portland Japanese Garden. The proposal includes increasing the leasehold, adding a new cultural village, and other improvements that are listed on this slide. Development on conditional use sites that include increased floor area by more than 10% require approval through a Type 3 conditional use review. Approval criteria for the open space zone are 33.815.100A through D. Development within the resource area of the environmental conservation zone that exceeds code allowances requires approval through a Type 2 environmental review. The approval criteria for this review are found in Code Section 33.430250A and E. The appeal issues are summarized here. The staff presentation addresses each applicable criterion as the appellants claim that none of the criteria have been met.
Can you go back to that slide for a second? So you, and to the appeal issues, you refer to the appellants, plural. How is your presentation impacted by the withdrawal of one of the appeals?
It truly is not impacted by it because the appeal that remains cited every single one of the approval criteria. It didn't say why the appellant thought they weren't met. It just said these are not met and listed all of the approval criteria.
So in other words, your presentation today is not impacted by the withdrawal because of the breadth of the issues raised by the remaining appellant.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. The zoning map here shows an R7 zone lot, which is on the north end of the red, darker red hatched area. That is a residential property with a residential house on it that was approved for use as the administrative offices for the garden. There are no changes that are being proposed on that property. The OS-zoned portion of the site is the larger 12.56-acre leasehold shown in the darker red, and that is where the proposed development would occur. Other city-owned property is shown here in pink. The hearings officer affirms that the Japanese garden leasehold, the darker red part, is a form of ownership interest and can be legally defined as the site for notification and review purposes. This slide shows the full build-out plan with the existing and proposed development for this review. So we have the approval criteria shown on each of the next several slides. For the first criterion, the Japanese garden has occupied this site for more than 50 years, predating the OS designation, which was intentionally placed on the site to protect the character of the garden. The proposal will enhance and expand the garden, which is a use that was found to maintain open space and be consistent with the intended character and purpose of this OS-zoned area. Criterion A3 is not shown here, but it addresses the designated environmental resources on the site, and this is fully addressed later in our discussion of the environmental review. Transportation staff stated that the garden leasehold area does not front onto any public streets but only onto Southwest Kingston, a private park drive. So the transportation element of the comprehensive plan does not apply to the site. The code lists evaluation factors for this criterion that consist of a variety of different transportation system elements, including impacts on pedestrians. The hearings officer was persuaded by testimony regarding pedestrian safety, and so he included condition G that requires construction of a planting buffer and sidewalk along Southwest Kingston. We note that the condition incorrectly stated that the sidewalk is required on the north side. There is no north side on this street. The condition needs to be corrected in revised findings, requiring the sidewalk to be on the west side of the street, which is what is shown in this picture.
So in that parking strip that exists now, but behind the curb, right? Okay.
Yep. Transportation can answer that, but it's definitely in that location.
Sidewalks north and south of there, I recall.
Right? Yes. Now,
that was referred to correctly of this as the west side on page 12 of the decision, but then it was incorrect in the condition.
Correct, yes.
So we can just
it was only the condition that worded it incorrectly as being on the north, because I believe the map showed it on the top of the page, which is traditionally the north, but in this case was the west.
Okay, great, thank you.
The Japanese Garden is a partner in the park-wide transportation demand management plan. This plan addresses other factors listed in this criterion, such as parking, transit, and reduction of auto trips. Strategies utilized include expansion of the free park shuttle service and use of revenues from paid parking to fund the park's Transportation Management Association. Transportation recommended conditions, which were included in the hearings officer's decision. The garden must offer free or discounted TriMet passes to garden staff and encourage them to use the free shuttle for transit connections. Also, the garden must coordinate event scheduling to limit the number of visitors on peak days and thus limit parking demand. The access drive shown here, there were some issues that were raised around this criterion, and I do not know whether they are still on the table or not because the appeal statement didn't specify. The hearings officer addressed the issues that were raised around this drive and found them to be irrelevant in this review. These included concerns about truck traffic carrying soil from the excavation at the project site. Neighbors questioned the stability of the access drive to withstand this traffic, but these concerns were addressed to the satisfaction of the hearings officer by the applicant's geotechnical engineer and review by BDS site development staff. The other issue related to this access drive was about losing a connection to Kingston Street and the Wildwood Trail. Because this connection was never a formally designated public recreation trail or an official pedestrian path under the city's transportation system plan, it is not considered part of the city's designated transportation system, and so it was not considered as part of the conditional use review under the relevant approval criteria. Parks and Recreation can certainly work outside of this review process if they wish to pursue creation of a route to serve as a substitute pathway for this connection. The parking lot shown here that's adjacent to the access road and to the garden will be used as the construction staging area, and so it would be closed for approximately 15 months. Excavation work would occur during the first 4 months, and this is when the traffic would be heaviest. The applicants expect very little construction traffic to occur after the excavation process is completed, so any impacts would be of short duration and are addressed in condition O through a vehicular construction management plan. The garden attracts a large number of visitors and hosts many events, which are projected to increase with time. The proposed development is expected to help accommodate these increased numbers, and the hearings officer found that the proposed development will not in and of itself create any impacts on livability for the adjacent residential area. This slide shows where the majority of the proposed development would occur, which is at the cultural village at the top of the existing access road. And that's shown here with the green circle that's more or less at the center of the photograph. The nearest residences are above that circle to the northwest, along the western edge of the leasehold and the edge of Fairview Boulevard. So they're a fair distance away from this activity area. Because the western edge of the garden is visible from these backyards, the applicants have agreed to build a 6-foot-tall wood fence and add additional landscaping along the western edge of the access road. This would block views of the new buildings and headlights from vehicles on the access road, ensuring that there would be no impacts to these neighbors due to glare from headlights or intrusions on privacy. Conditions of approval address potential impacts on safety. Based on recommendations from the Police Bureau, these require installation of CCTV cameras and also providing access for emergency personnel through the new proposed security gate that would be at the base of the access road in more or less this location. Finally, opponents had claimed that the proposal needs to be consistent with the Washington Park Master Plan and the Comprehensive Plan. This is inaccurate, as you can see by the wording of this approval criterion. The Washington Park Master Plan was never adopted as part of the Comprehensive Plan, and the site's not located within the boundary of any adopted neighborhood or community plans. Therefore, this criterion does not apply to this proposal. This concludes the discussion of issues related to the conditional use review. Now, here's Rachel.
Thank you, Kathleen. I will discuss the appeal issues and hearings officer findings as they relate to the environmental review. Opposition testimony implied that adequate alternatives were not considered, including off-site alternatives. The approval criteria do not require consideration of off-site alternatives for proposals that are within the conservation zone, only the protection zone. Regardless, the applicant did initially explore off-site locations as part of their analysis, though all were eventually rejected. For example, a satellite location could not meet their project purposes and is not suitable from an operational perspective. Other closer locations are already occupied, such as the tennis courts or Rose Garden, or are equally or more environmentally sensitive, as shown on this map. We still have a few minutes to go. Sorry.
We'll allow extra time.
The appellant claims the proposed development does not have the least impacts and that there will be significant impacts on resources left to be undisturbed. Within the expanded lease area, 3 site design layouts were considered. Impacts from all 3 are shown here, with the preferred alternative in green, alternative 1 in yellow, and alternative 2 in orange. A description of each alternative is found in the hearings officer's decision, but as you can see here, the applicant's preferred alternative impacts significantly less area. The preferred alternative uses targeted expansions of existing development to maximize the use of already disturbed area, such as the top of the access road, an area that's outside or at the edge of the environmental zone, such as the area between the existing parking lot and the access road. Maximizing use of these areas significantly reduces the amount of new site disturbance and loss of native vegetation. A total of 1.69 acres of impacts to the environmental conservation zone are contained within the limits of project work. This includes all proposed structures, site improvements, and temporary disturbance areas. Of the identified impact area, 70% is within existing disturbed areas, and 30% will be new impacts. Intrusion of new structures and manicured gardens into the conservation zone has been minimized. The preferred alternative also eliminates the need to site new buildings across the historic landslide, which is the red dotted line. The hearings officer found that the proposed development minimizes the loss of resources and functional values, and the proposed location, design, and construction methods are less detrimental than other practicable alternatives. He included conditions of approval for construction management, conformance with the approved plans, and permit and inspection requirements to ensure that the proposed development is constructed as shown and with the least impacts. The appellant also claims the mitigation plan fails to compensate for detrimental impacts. As shown on the approved plans, all temporary disturbance areas will be revegetated with native plants following completion of development. Those are the green areas on this slide. The new permanent disturbance in the resource will be mitigated by resource enhancements of an area equal in size, which are the blue areas. This mitigation will include both removal of invasive species and replanting of middle-story shrubs appropriate for a fir maple forest. The applicant proposes a total of 692 trees, 1,384 shrubs, plus ground cover plants and native grass seed to replant the combined temporary disturbance in new mitigation areas. The hearings officer found the mitigation plan will compensate for impacts at the site because the mitigation area is greater than the area of permanent disturbance. The number of proposed trees and shrubs far exceeds those required by code. All temporary areas will be completely revegetated with native vegetation. The interface between the development and protected resource areas will be buffered by those additional mitigation plantings. Removal of invasive species and replacement with native mid-story vegetation and ground cover will increase species diversity and improve wildlife habitat. And finally, ground cover plantings will provide assistance with pollution removal, nutrient retention, and erosion control. The hearings officer did include conditions for monitoring and maintenance of the mitigation areas to ensure their long-term success. Based on the evidence in the record, the hearings officer found that all applicable approval criteria for both the conditional use and the environmental review were met or could be met with the conditions of approval in his decision and summarized by staff here. As I'm sure you're aware, the alternatives before council in the matter of the appeal of the hearings officer decision are to either deny the appeal and uphold the hearings officer decision for approval of the proposal, or uphold the appeal, thereby overturning the hearings officer decision. Council may overturn all or individual parts of the decision. This concludes the staff presentation. We're available to answer questions now or following the remaining testimony.
Great. Thank you. Questions for staff? All right. Thanks and stand by.
Thank you.
So we'll now hear from the appellant. You need slides, Ms. McKenzie, again?
I think we're organized.
Got them loaded.
I've
okay.
Had some coaching.
All right. Good afternoon.
Hi. Okay, wait a sec. Okay, she's got it all set. My name is Hillary McKenzie. I'm an architect licensed in Oregon and Washington. I live at 2722 Southwest Rutland Terrace, Portland, Oregon, 97205. I've been submitting applications to the City of Portland for over 30 years. Prior to being an architect, I worked as a land use planner at the City of Tigard. And this isn't about the Japanese gardens in a sense. I love the Japanese gardens. I go by them every day. The curator is an amazingly gifted man. His staff that he's assembled, they have made a thing of great beauty that I think everyone in the city enjoys. The slide up there is their antique gate. A friend of mine, or actually a colleague, helped restore it. It's an amazing piece of work. It's about doing something very different up there. These are from the applicant's submittal. They're very hard to read. I had to enlarge these just to see the information on them. They're modern buildings. They have glass window walls. They have plate aluminum roofs. It clearly shows two full stories. This is the garden house. It's also got the some sliding wood screens. The village house is, again, clearly two stories, modern building, plate aluminum roofs, sliding window walls. It looks like there's room for a third floor. There's a kind of a mezzanine tier of windows. No stairs were shown on the ground floor plans that they submitted to the hearings officer, so I think a tremendous effort was made to not disclose the full size and scale of these buildings. In fact, the hearings officer approved 11,340 square feet of building. That is a fairly inaccurate measure of how much building is really here. It's more like twice that. It's closer, somewhere between 25 and 30,000 square feet of building. These are buildings more of the scale of things up at the Forestry Center and at the zoo. where there's a lot of parking, there's a lot of room for traffic. And I submit things to the Building Department, Bureau of Development Services all the time. If I submitted drawings like this, were this hard to read, without clear dimensions, without square footage dimensions on the floor plan, it would get kicked right back out. Kathleen Stokes has reviewed my stuff. Every once in a while I get lazy like everybody else. She kicks it back. These did not get kicked back. They went through, and so I don't know how they're going to build these buildings. Are they going to build them like a barn and not put in the extra floors? I don't know what that's about. Here's the Tea Cafe. Same thing. It's a very modern building. Plate aluminum roof, glass window walls, sliding window walls. All these, and here's the ticket booth, which will be right adjacent to the antique gate. Same thing, it's got a glass canopy roof. They have very good architects. It's not that they have bad architects, and everybody appreciates good architecture. But the scale of this development is so much bigger than the garden, it becomes the tail wagging the dog. That the buildings in the Japanese garden are fully integrated into the site. They add to the whole experience of going to the garden. The pavilion building is integrated into the garden. This is something else. This is, again, the scale that's up at the Forestry Center. It's not what I think the hearings officer understood, and I frankly don't even think planning staff knows what they approved. This is a sketch I did very quickly. It shows their current leasehold. It's kind of hard to see. It's the blue line that goes around here. It actually goes across the street and comes around here. This is a knoll. It hugs the base of the knoll. And what they want to do is expand it, clean up some edges, which nobody cares about, and go clear over to the back of all these houses. This is the access road they use now to run the shuttles up and down. And this is the main connector trail that hooks into the rest of Washington Park. The hearings officer approved expansion of their leasehold. There is nothing in Title 33 that allows the hearings officer to transfer public land to a private entity. It is all about zoning. It is not about land sale or leasehold or anything. And that's the first thing he says, is they can enlarge their lease. I think it's fine. He has no authority to do that. I would ask for that if I went in for permits. I'd ask for some right-of-way or maybe a little extra this, a little extra that. No, you can't do that. Something that would solve a lot of problems for the neighborhood and the people who are here to testifying is this connector link, because people use these trails all the time, and they are official trails. There's new signage. They're on all the maps. If you Google Japanese Garden to Rose Garden and Rose Garden to the rest of Washington Park, Vietnam Memorial Zoo, you get two pages on Google of how to do that. If they kept their leasehold where it is now and hugged the base of the hill, they could keep this all open for the public, not transfer that land, build a very short pedestrian link that would be open the same hours as the park from 5 in the morning to 10 at night, so pedestrians could still use this access road and connect to this main trail link. This wouldn't be hard to do. They could do security gates at the base of the hill here if they're worried about security for their new development. It's a completely viable alternative. I personally think they should reduce the shuttle traffic, because you aren't building 25 or 30,000 square feet of new buildings and not expect anybody to come. So you're going to have a lot more vehicular and pedestrian traffic conflicts on this roadway. And they could look at an inclined elevator or a funicular, because this is about moving people through our parks, and you can't just keep adding cars to a very limited system that's supposed to be about open space and pedestrian activity. It's not an urban setting. It's supposed to be the opposite of an urban setting. And so if they did a little short funicular, it's only 100 feet. This roadway is, I want to say, 1,300 feet to get all the way up and down. And part of their new building involves a garage for the extra shuttle buses. I mean, let's dial it back. This is a pedestrian city. We've got livability issues. And these poor people who live fronting on Fairview, some of who are here today, they have nighttime events, headlights, traffic, delivery trucks. All that would be eliminated if they had another short link right up here to get to the upper part. This is about the trail. This is a sign at the Japanese Garden heading into the trail. They put that up. Here's a sign of in Wildwood showing access to the Japanese in the Rose Garden and connecting with Wildwood. More signage. These are all through the park. The Hoyt Arboretum just spent a fortune making these really nice signs because they have a whole network of trails. And here at the bottom, you can see it says to Rose Garden and Japanese Garden. So this is a major link. I would say a few thousand people use this every week, and they don't have the data from the new trail counters that have been put up in the park, but they will have that data, and you would have that to base your decision on. This is what you see. This was taken in the summer after the Japanese Garden is closed. These people took the Max to the zoo, and then the whole family, visitors from someplace else, came to walk to the Rose Gardens. And I see this all the time, and it's what you want. It's a park. You want people out there walking around enjoying it. I think it's a very important thing. Briefly, I just want to talk about the legal brief that was submitted by Miller Nash. In it, she asked for a specific exemption or exception interpretation to the Planning and Zoning Code in the definition of site. Now, every time I submit an application to the city, site is an ownership. It's not ambiguous at all. It says site is an ownership. If you're doing a tenant modification in a business park, industrial park, strip mall, and you're asking for a conditional use, that's a tenant in an ownership. That's a trigger for pedestrian improvements, parking lot improvements, landscape improvements that you define. There's a reason you define site as an ownership and not a tenancy. And so this is typical of the whole application, that their attorney specifically asked counsel to request the council interpret the definition of ownership under PDC 339110 to include a leasehold interest. That would throw out, I don't know how many tens of thousands of applications you've got running through development services, but this is the operable definition, the one I'm talking about. They want a special definition, and that's my complaint with this entire application, is by using special definitions and incomplete submittals, only 80 neighbors in Arlington Heights neighborhood were even notified of this application. It affects the whole neighborhood. There are representatives from Goose Hollow and Sylvan Highlands. People use those trails. This is a regional park. People come from all over town to use this park. They park in the Rose Garden parking lot. I see them in the trails every morning and in the evening. People come from Selwood, Northeast, North Portland. None of them got notified that they're going to lose their main link into the park. People come up from across the country. They come from other countries to use this park. This is not something where you want to have a lower standard for your application running through Bureau of Development Services.
So you just on that point, if I could, is it your position that the applicant doesn't have standing to seek this proceeding, or is it your position that the hearing officer incorrectly interpreted the definition of site, or what?
Well, I'm not an attorney, and you are.
you're the appellant.
I'm the appellant.
So you have
and
the
so
burden.
I can go from experience. So, yes, I agree. The hearings officer incorrectly defined site. If he had followed the standard usage definition that everybody else uses, I don't know what would have happened, if it would have kicked it back to proper public notification, because if you'd use the true standard code procedure, ownership is City of Portland. Well, that's Washington Park, and it links to Forest Park, and you could maybe argue. So I don't know what that would trigger, but to me that is a very important thing that they just blew by, because this is public land. The Japanese Gardens basically leases it for zero. There's a public benefit. Everybody loves the garden. But this has to go through the regular channels. You can't just barely hit the lowest bar, and say, we're all good, we should approve it, when everybody else, individuals, private developers, have to follow these rules.
Just would help me to know, when in the proceeding below to which you filed an appeal, did you make an appearance in that proceeding?
The hearings officer?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
And did you submit testimony?
Absolutely. And verbal and written. And then I did, the record was open for a week, and I submitted more stuff.
And did you offer any legal authority for your position that you before the hearing officer?
You know, the neighborhood had Steve Janik, and I don't know if he addressed site. You know, we were trying to coordinate, and so I don't know. Maybe you should ask me better.
You have this opportunity to come before us and raise objections. and cite to legal authority that you want us to review or to think about in terms of
assessing. So I can cite legal authority.
You are the appellant.
Yeah.
You're the one who's appealing.
Yeah, but I don't, I don't know if I'm not an attorney. So sure, I'll cite legal authority to
I'm not telling you how to make your presentation, but you're asking us to overturn a hearing officer's report. And so I'm just suggesting that if you have specific legal authority that you can cite to us on some of the things you're putting in the record, then we then have a chance to ask the Bureau of Development Services to respond to that.
And I don't have it in front of me. In my prior testimony to the hearings officer, I basically reproduced exactly what it says in Title 33 with the section, the site definition of site, and it's very clear. And then you've got an option where you can declare site as the developed portion of the site only, particularly like if you have a huge chunk of vacant land. And I wrote this all out in detail in my submittal to the hearings officer. And the Japanese Gardens Council is saying, well, regardless, we're just going to use the developed portion of the site, and therefore it's only this place where we're putting the buildings, and this site is developed and the rest of Washington Park isn't. That's not a strong argument either, because Washington Park is developed as open space. It's got trails. It's got signage. You can't say that, well, we have more plants here that have gardeners, and the rest of the park isn't developed because it doesn't have gardeners. So there are two things on site. So I guess I would cite legal authority, and it's all in the zoning code. It's not that complicated.
Yeah, you've cited this, but let me pursue. Have you gone where you wanted to go there?
We're pleased to hear the your position. I don't mean to interrupt the flow of your presentation, but to the extent there's points and authorities, it helps us then when we bring back the Bureau of Development Services.
But let me make sure I understand the heart of your argument on the site issue, and that is, obviously, if the site included all of Washington Park, then the proportion of the site being covered by buildings would be minuscule, right? But you're talking about it as a notice issue more than as a scale issue. You've raised the mass and scale issue separately.
Correctly.
But the site issue is critical, in your opinion, because of the number of people affected or, therefore, the number of people noticed, right?
Yes, the site issue is very critical because notification is just key because, and this goes to getting my start as a land use planner. I was a land use planner right after Tom McCall set up our land use laws, and it was an amazing time. The land use laws came from citizen participation, neighborhood groups, blah, blah, blah. So the notification, these pieces in our zoning code they're the core of our land use laws. And so if you throw those out, you just threw out the zoning code because that's the beginning, who you tell, who's it going to affect? And the idea is you tell the people it's going to matter to. Well, these are regional parks. You tell the people it's going to matter to. You tell the citizens.
Right.
You tell the people next to the park. That's what it's about. So that's the trigger. And so I don't know technically how that works. If somebody doesn't do the notification, do you just reapply and then re-notify properly and see what happens? I mean, that would be an approach.
Right.
Or maybe there are other issues that maybe to be efficient, because everybody likes the Japanese Garden and they're have to do fundraising and everything to be more efficient. Maybe they could work things out with the neighborhood and the concerned people ahead of time before they reapply or re-notice, because that was one of the problems with all this, is they wouldn't ever tell the neighborhood what they were really doing. And so nobody knew till we got the final application, and then all of a sudden it's got all these buildings and they're closing the trail and and only 80 people knew. And
Yeah, I hear you. I got it.
You get it.
So, yeah, please.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I don't want to.
So, I've got 21 seconds, and now I've sort of lost where
I was.
Yeah,
we'll give you a little extra time because we did interrupt the flow of your presentation.
But if there are any more questions, I'll just finish. You know, the hearings officer didn't have authority to approve the extension of leasehold. That's a key issue. If they don't expand the leasehold, it really cuts into the effect on the public because they are in this more sheltered area, and they do need more space. The maintenance building has all these little pods around it, and the office is in a house, so everybody understands that. And then the ambiguity in their application, that they were not clear at the bulk, the size, the scope of these buildings. It's really, and I don't really, the hearings officer for sure didn't, because he approved that 11,000 square feet, and the buildings are not. You know, if you read their drawings, and I don't think staff really knows how big they are either. So
With that, I will close.
All right.
Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Any further questions from Ms. McKenzie? All right, thank you very much. Okay, so now we want to hear from anyone who's here to testify in support of the appeal individually.
Okay. I have a list of seven people.
Okay.
The first three, please come on up, are Joe Angel, Christy Galen, and Michael Wallace.
Okay. Looks like Mr. Angel may have left. Or at least left temporarily. Why don't the two of you come on up and call the next person.
Go Stu Levy.
Stu had to leave too, but I have his.
Connie Kirk.
Sorry, who's the next
one? Connie Kirk.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mayor, can we just get clarification? You're here to testify in support of the sole remaining appeal that's before us?
Absolutely.
So you're. Yes. The testimony we've just heard, and you're here for that appeal.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Please proceed. Who'd ever like to be first?
Want to go? Sure. My name is Michael Wallace. I live at 3213 Southwest Upper Cascade Drive, Portland 97205, about 20 minutes walk from the Japanese Garden. I love the garden, but I'm opposed to this expansion. First, the garden area. Japanese Garden proposes to increase its area by nearly 40% by acquiring 3.5 acres of public property, closing a public road and a popular walking trail to both the Japanese Garden and the Rose Garden, increasing vehicle traffic and congestion, and paying nothing for it. Nothing. That is not right. Should a private organization be allowed to take and fence off 3.5 acres of public space for nothing? Second, the lease expansion. The hearings officer overstepped his authority in approving the lease expansion. The application is about developing an open space zone. It's not about the lease. Third, public notification. The application for this acquisition was noticed to only about 80 households and ignored more than 200 households that will be directly affected. This application is about developing public parkland, a valuable public resource for the city of Portland. So it is critical to follow the rules on public notification. Fourth, the buildings. The application grossly understates the size of the more than 25,000 square feet of planned buildings, two of which are three stories tall or look that way, like the Forestry Center. The new buildings do not benefit the general public, but are designed primarily to increase revenue. Fifth, the master plan. Developing the trail that links the Rose Garden and Japanese Garden with Washington Park is a key part of Portland's master plan. The Japanese Garden lease requires that it uphold and support the master plan. The land use application completely ignores the master plan and the principles on which it is based. As an example of good land use and public stewardship, the garden must follow and uphold the master plan. Finally, a private organization. The Japanese Garden is a private, nonprofit organization. It was allowed to develop an authentic Japanese garden on public parkland for public benefit. The garden is a valuable asset to the city of Portland, but it should not be allowed to expand its private use area at public expense, close popular roads and trails without informing concerned and affected citizens. Public space is valuable to Portland residents, and as the city grows, this open space will take on more value. Rather than allow a private organization to consume more public space, Washington Park should continue to exist for everyone as a public benefit. The residents who are most in need of open space are the least likely to pay to visit an expanded Japanese garden. Who is the garden for? Who is public parkland for? This application has not followed proper procedures, and the appeal should be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
My name is Christy Galen, and I live at 2732 Southwest Fairview Boulevard, and our property abuts the Japanese Garden Access Road. I appreciate the beauty of the Japanese Garden and the cultural experience it provides, but I believe the magnitude of the proposed development is too large for the site. I'm an environmental consultant with over 25 years' experience, and I specialize in habitat assessment and restoration. I've written numerous environmental reviews for residential and institutional development projects, including Lewis and Clark College and OHSU. For both these institutions, new master plans were required by the city prior to any development applications due to the size of the properties and their location in an environmental zone. Accordingly, the City of Portland Bureau of Parks and Rec needs to follow the same rules that the city imposes on other large property owners. The Japanese Garden is part of Washington Park, and the proposed project will impact over 1.5 acres of public open space. It includes excavating 14,740 cubic yards of material, which is equivalent to an 11-foot deep hole with the footprint of the Portland building. This in open space, this in our parks. The 1981 Washington Park Master Plan should be followed, or it should be updated before any development is allowed in the park. This would allow public input and would provide a public vision. There has not been sufficient notice, public notice, either for the whole project or for that access trail, but I think that's been covered. But I'll get on to the mitigation. The proposed mitigation for forest impacts is inadequate because the proposed mitigation areas are mostly already forested with a nearly closed forest canopy. It does not make ecological sense to plant the number of proposed trees in an existing forest that already consists of more than 80% tree cover. The submittal from the applicant did not even describe these existing conditions. If additional trees are planted in the forest, they will be too crowded, and most will not survive. They will definitely not improve wildlife habitat or groundwater retention functions. The proposed plan will not mitigate for the loss of forest habitat. It will result in a net loss of 0.5 acre of native forest habitat that belongs to the public. The proposed mitigation follows city code requirements, but only in the number of plantings, not in where they are located, and not in their function. It disregards the condition of the forest where proposed mitigation will occur. I face similar challenges when I design mitigation for OHSU. We planted as many trees, shrubs, and herbaceous plants that we could on site, but we also removed 4 acres of English ivy and other invasive species. The Japanese Garden could easily scale back their development by using the Forestry Center or other existing buildings downtown for their non-garden activities, such as meetings, lectures, and exhibits. And by keeping garden-specific activities, such as garden techniques, tea ceremony, and cultural festivals at the garden, this would definitely reduce the scale of the business, the building that will be built, or that they want to build, and they can also actually improve the garden. Add garden, add green space, add plants rather than buildings.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you. I'm a little bit of a shorty. There we go. Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, my name is Connie Kirk. I live at 1132 Southwest 19th Avenue in Goose Hollow. I have been a member of the Japanese Garden. It is an oasis of tranquility, but I urge you to vote no to the Japanese Garden expansion. I echo the concern Arlington Heights neighbors did not receive comprehensive notification regarding the expansion, and they deserve to be part of the larger civic discourse. I have found in my experience that neighbors' voices don't always filter through to City Hall through their neighborhood associations, and I'm delighted that I can be here. The proposal elevates commercialization over neighborhood livability. And as a taxpayer, I appreciate the wisdom of the comprehensive plan goals 6 and 8. I do not think they're being met. Goal 6 reinforces the livability of neighborhoods, should reduce air, noise, and water pollution, and lessen reliance on the automobile. And Goal 8 requires the applicant to maintain and improve the quality of Portland's air, water, and land resources, and protect neighborhoods and businesses from detrimental noise. Goal 6 and 8 not met. Commercial expansion encourages automotive use, and additional supply trucks will be necessary to meet the project's commercial needs. Air pollution will increase, land in the environmental zone will be cleared, and these factors do not reinforce livability in Arlington Heights. But this isn't happening in a vacuum. We too, Arlington Heights, will be affected by increased traffic, and so too will Goose Hollow, because Goose Hollow is an artery for Mack traffic, Timbers traffic, traffic en route to Washington Park, traffic en route to the Rose Garden, traffic en route to the Japanese Gardens. And so goals 6 and 8 require the reduction of and protection from detrimental noise as well.
Arlington Heights will not be protected. Commercial zoning allows 24-hour trash collection. And the City of Portland's Noise Control Task Force and Noise Review Board in 2004 found that noise from late-night collection adversely impacts health by raising blood pressure levels and respiratory levels. You can see that on pages 2 and 3. This very impressive study from the city states that noise from late-night collection adversely impacts the sleep of healthcare workers. Residents of Arlington Heights, as well as neighboring Kings Hill, Goose Hollow, and other areas, will be adversely affected as healthcare workers live in these areas and work at neighboring hospitals. And so I say please vote no to the Japanese Garden expansion and allow time for a better vision to emerge from this very, very noble institution. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Questions for any of these folks? Thank you all.
I have Stu Levy's.
Yes, please. Just leave it with Carl, and we'll make sure it's in the record.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mayor Hales.
Yes.
I'm informed by staff that two of the issues mentioned in the testimony were not raised below. One has to do with increasing commercialization. The other issue has to do with noise and other impacts of trash collection.
Okay.
Additionally, I would also note that comp plan goals 6 and 8 are not relevant approval criteria for this land use review.
Okay. Got it. Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much.
The last two signed up in support are Mike Dowd and William Newman.
Mike, on short. Yeah, and you were called earlier. Yes. Mike, go ahead, please.
I'm Mike Dowd, 0753 Southwest Miles Street, miles from the Japanese Garden. I'm one of the few people from outside the neighborhood here today, not because other people don't care, because they don't know about this. They haven't known, and they still don't. I can't possibly cover all the reasons the decision was wrong, but they're all in the record, and he didn't rebut any of my testimony. He just said he didn't agree with it without reasons. My main message for today is that upholding this decision won't solve anything. It will only move the conflict down the road to where the problems and ill will be escalated. Here's three reasons why, all of which I've brought up in my earlier testimony. First, the notification was messed up. The staff and applicant agreed that the site was the leasehold, but in regard to the legal reasons for that, it's really simple. You read it in the zoning code. The zoning code says site is an ownership, and ownership is defined very simply in a sentence, and lease is nowhere in there. I've done at least 100 projects with the same situation and have never been allowed that interpretation because the zoning code doesn't allow it. But if you let it stand, that means thousands of projects involving tenants in every shopping center and every building in Portland must be allowed the same interpretation, and I'm going to ask for it the next time I go to the permit center. That will throw out the ability of the city to require zoning code upgrades to all remodeling projects. It'll be a disaster. Second, the expansion doesn't come anywhere near to matching what was approved. Hillary McKenzie spoke about that with the buildings. Basically, preliminary drawings were submitted. I've had projects held up, land use reviews held up, because I didn't show the size of window mullions. Their square footage is off by thousands of square feet. Third, there's some simple ways to keep the trail open that wouldn't harm the garden, but those won't happen unless you require it now. By the way, I live next to Willamette Park, and the Water Bureau has done a fantastic job with public involvement for a new pump station. There's at least 20 signs up there right now at every entrance. It's a shame that the Parks Bureau didn't do public notification on this, and that planning didn't require the minimum legal notification. So I know voting for voting in favor of an appeal wouldn't be a pleasant decision, but it is the best decision for the city and the parks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Please.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is William Newman. I'm a resident in Fairhaven Lane in the Sylvan Highlands area. I'm a board member and treasurer of the Sylvan Highlands Neighborhood Association. And I'm speaking on behalf of our association to recommend support of Ms. McKenzie's appeal for this for two reasons. Due to the significant impact in the park, the expanded traffic and commercial activity, and the transfer of public lands for private use, we feel that a much broader process of communication, disclosure, and input needs to happen.